Every lap in under a minute. Every move made to matter. Every decision impacting the outcome of the race. Supercars in Perth. Every second matters. Bosch Power Tools Perth Super Sprint, May 17 to 19. Book now at Ticketek. Supercars. Unforgettable.
A Motorsport Podcast Network production.
Hey everybody, Aaron Noonan here. Great to have you along. Another edition of the V8 Sleuth Podcast, powered by Repco for another week. Now, you'll notice I don't sound the same. I don't have the regular recording gear with me this week, so hence the audio is a little bit different to how it usually sounds. But forget about that. This is all about the pod. It's all about the interview. It's all about the guest. And this week, part one of my two-part chat with Adam Macro. Now, for those of you who might not know Adam, he won the 1998 Australian Formula Ford Championship. He also won the 2006 Fujitsu Series. Now, that's the category, of course, that we know today as the Super 2 Series. Ultimately, a full-time V8 supercar drive didn't quite pan out for Adam, but he became a trusted endurance driver for 10 years at Bathurst in V8 supercars and sits in the record books with last week's guest Steve Ellery as the first 888 Bathurst 1000 podium finisher. Now, in episode one, we cover a wide amount of ground. How he's helping the next generation take their first steps into car racing. We talk about his time in Formula Ford and the early V8 supercar stuff, and so much more. I think you'll enjoy this one. So buckle up, it's time to start. Adam Macro on the V8 Sleuth Podcast, powered by Repco.
Adam Macro, welcome along to the V8 Sleuth Podcast.
Thank you very much for having me. It's good to see you again.
Absolutely. It's been...
A while.
A while.
Yeah, it's been a while since I've been to a track.
A long while.
Well, not to, you know, supercars, so to speak, but I'm at the track every week. But, you know, especially the last month or so, it's been really busy. Mm. Being at Winton sort of every Friday, you know, giving people opportunities to drive race cars and, yeah, it's been flat out.
Normally when we do these pods, when we're talking about people's involvement in the sport, their careers, we tend to do the, hey, let's go back to the start at the start. But I want to be a little bit different today and start at the now because kind of positioned us there anyway. So what is your motorsport involvement? I've heard from a few people that you are the Hyundai Excel whisperer. You've had more to do with Hyundai Excels in the last little while than anything. Is that right?
Yeah. So when I have to kind of go back a little bit further than that, but I had my go-kart business for years. So I was building engines and training young kids and we had the kart business, and that was very successful. A lot of, you know, current drivers that are now sort of Super 2, Super 3, Carrera Cup.
What's come your name?
Okay, so Andrew Mazuris,
yep.
Cody Donald, Formula Ford. Now I've got to remember, and I'm going to forget someone now. I worked with Matt Brabham in karting when he was a junior. I had all these names written down, but I forgot to bring it. Yeah, so Andrew Mazuris. Cody Donald, now I've had a mental blank. Lachlan Gibbons, I built his engines for a while when we did CIK, he's current 86 champion. Mm-hmm. Worked with him a bit. Dimitri Agathos that runs production cars. I've just gone blank.
That's a decent list. That's
no,
decent
no, no, no. There's more. There's a lot
there's
more.
Plenty of them. There's plenty of them.
Yeah, there's plenty of them. But, yeah, we've had a lot of success. People that come through and done well, and it's such a rewarding thing to watch, you know, the kids grow and come through the ranks and achieve stuff, you know. So
you're building cars, building
engines.
Yeah.
So I've got a little factory in Mornington. Yep. We're building Hyundais full time. And
who would have thought Excels would be the buzz category? In
exactly
motorsport.
Right. So we, halfway through 16, I went to Phillip Island. One of my customers is actually interested in building a Hyundai, so I thought, oh, there's a race on at Phillip Island. I'll duck down on a Saturday and have a look or Sunday. And I bought one on the way home. I was like, no, that's us. And I could see there was a void between karting because it was like karts. And then the next step was Formula Ford, which is a fantastic step. Don't get me wrong. I love Formula Ford. But I think there needed to be something in between to just go and learn how to change gears and learn how to, you know, have a crash and, you know, go to the wreckers, fix it up a bit. You know, just that little...
somewhere in the middle.
Yeah, it's somewhere in the middle that's not expensive. You can sort of have an accident, not too bad. You could probably get it out the next session if you bash it out. Well, Formula Ford, you know, everything flies off. So, and so I bought a car and I was very low key. It was just a bit of fun. Leased it out. It kept me at the track, scratched the itch. And yeah, it just snowballed. And yeah, and then I decided sort of, well, during COVID, I'm going to get serious. Started doing all the development and all the testing and on the dyno and late nights building engines and doing all that sort of stuff. And here we are, full-time, national champions, pretty much won everything all year, won the Enduro on the weekend. I've got an amazing driver in Ethan Grigoult. I don't know if you've heard of him.
No.
He's a sim champion.
Uh-huh.
So he's come from the sim and never driven karts, never he hasn't done the normal thing. Mm. He's just jumped on the sim and spent all his time on that because that's all he could afford. He won Aussie Driver Search unfortunately missed out after
all. Didn't go so well.
Yeah. That went down. And, yeah, I think he ended up getting an XL. I don't know whether he bought it or someone else bought it for him, but it just, you know, it's sort of he ended up with an XL. And he was sort of banging around a race here and a race there when he could afford it. I kept an eye on him. I saw a video on Facebook in car with him driving, and I'm like watching the video and going, "Bloody hell, this kid's good!" Like you just know, like, and I've been pretty good in terms of, you know, talent scouting, so to speak, over the course of my career, and I'm like, you know, I remember sending a message to one of my mates, and I'm like, I can drive. This guy can steer, you know. So I kept him more of an eye on him, more an eye on him. And then he rang me one day and goes, "Can you do the suspension for me on my car?" Before I knew it, his car was in the shop. He went out with the suspension. I did all the suspension, set it all up for him, and he nearly won the next round. And I'm like, mate, with that car, you're punching well above your weight in that car with the spec that it was. So I rang him up and said, "Look, I want a good driver. Let's work together." And that's the end of it. So yeah, we went on and I think we got nearly every pole position at state titles this year. We won the nationals. We ended up second in the state title championship, a couple of penalties and stewards and
all the fun stuff.
We won't go there. but yeah, we won the national championship. We won the Enduro on the weekend, clean swept that on the weekend as well with him. Yeah, so now we're looks like we're going 86.
Look
out. So we're going to bring an 86 into the fold.
And, oh, we just got some breaking news here.
Breaking news. Wow. Yes. Hot off the press.
Yeah.
Like last night. but yeah, no, it looks like we're going to go 86.
Cool.
So massively working on sponsorship and getting funding and all that sort of stuff for Ethan. He's exceptional. Like I don't think I've ever seen raw talent for a long time. Like he's not young. He's 27, 26, 27, but
if you can pedal, you can pedal.
Yeah, credit when credit's due, and I don't say it very often, but he's exceptional. Mm. And I believe that if I can give him the right car next year, we can win the 86 championship without a problem.
There's a name that we'll keep an eye on because the 86s have produced some guys.
100%.
You know, recent times have gone into supercars and Super 2.
Yeah,
and
that's exactly right.
Yeah,
so,
it's cool.
So
it's
flat cool. out. But we also the XL Series has at club level has a Masters Championship.
Are you qualifying as a master now?
Oh, easy. I'm well into the Masters category. But we actually won that championship as well with one of my mates, Glenn McKenzie, who's not once again, he came in, never driven a go-kart, did a few track days back in the day, and can you build me a car? I just want to bang around, have some fun. Before you know it, we're going for championships. So, yeah, he did a mega job last year as well. So, well, this year, should I say. And, yeah, he's now the champion of the old farts, so to speak.
Official old fart category.
Official old fart category. So
it's cool.
No, it's very rewarding. And it's a lot of hard work.
Yeah. But it's a way of
it's
being
rewarding
involved.
And I love training people. And
that's great.
Yeah, and we're also flat out with our XL experience. We're basically anyone over the age of 14 can come and drive a full spec Hyundai XR race car for a whole day, one on one with me in the passenger seat. If you want, there's a passenger seat there, and that's just going huge. It's just getting bigger and bigger, and you know, I think that it won't be long until we're probably doing every Friday at Winton,
and be wearing a hole in the Hume.
It's been the last four weeks straight.
Yeah.
Everyone just absolutely just blown away by how much fun they are. So
it's cool.
It's cool. Well, and get a lot of very rewarding.
Yeah.
You know, very rewarding. Keeps me at the track.
Now let's rewind.
Okay.
We've got a bit to go through.
I know.
We've got a lot to go through.
This is going to end up 4 hours, I know.
If it goes 4 hours, then we're in a bit of hurt. So from what I can look back up, so did you start karting when you were, what, seven, somewhere about there?
Seven, yeah. My first trophy was in, I think, 87 or 86, I think. So maybe, I must have been, probably seven or eight.
And because of your dad's history in the sport, was it a case of he does it, I want to do it, or because of what he was doing?
No, I remember going to, I probably don't remember, but this is the story. I remember we went to Oakley go-kart track to watch Michael Ballan race go-karts. And I think ever since that day, I was every time I found 50 cents or 20 cents, I'd put it in piggy bank. And I'd say to mum and dad, that was for my go-kart.
Yeah.
And I don't know how old I was, but I was hooked. Yeah, absolutely. And that was, I think, I must have been, I must have been six or seven when we got the first go-kart. So Victor Lawnmower on it. I remember feeling at home at the track. Like I felt like this is where, you know, it's just feels normal.
Who were the kids that you went karting with as a kid that we know of for what they did? Yeah. Who were because it's kind of like karting's a crop.
Oh, 100%.
People come through together wherever they end up in the sport afterwards is some go all the way, some go most of the way, some go nowhere. Who were the names that we would know that you were banging around with as a kid in go-karts?
Okay, so Ashley Seawood.
Yeah.
Yep, so, you know.
Runs a TCR team. TCR, Porsche and
stuff like that. So he was the current club champion when I rolled up. I think he's a year older than me, I'm not sure. When I was a junior, James, Sarah and I were nemesis. Well, we were best friends at one point and we started crashing into each other and then we were still getting on all right. But he's still in karts, obviously. I think he won a sports stand championship though, didn't he, James, Sarah? Maybe. Yeah, I think he did. Anyway, it was James, Sarah and Ashley Seawood. I can't remember anyone else. At that age.
Yeah, it was young.
You know, but we had people in our, like my dad had a little kart team and he built all the engines and Darren Hossack was one of those people. That's how Darren sort of got into, he started working with dad and then dad got him a job at Drew Price Engineering, DPE, and that just flowed on.
And you guys ended up racing at Bathurst together.
Yeah, we ended up racing. And that was what was so cool. Yeah, exactly right.
It all came together later.
Yeah, there's a lot of cool stories that have flowed on through the years, you know.
So you go Formula V?
Yeah.
Went
Formula V. I must have been 14 or 15. I think they had to change the license rules after that or before that. It was very, very early.
Yeah.
We did a bit of Formula V and then I wrote it off.
Oh, that'll finish that.
Yeah. The old river at turn four at Winton sorted me out on a wet practice day one day. I hit the river straight ahead, head first into the wall. So that was the end of that. Then Formula Ford in 96, did state championships there. And, then 97 Nationals, ended up eighth. Frank Lowndes built my engines. And then 98, Mike Ballan always has a plan. It's a three-year deal. It's like, you know, cut your teeth in the state series, learn the national tracks the second year, and then the third year is your title. That's the one you got to win, you know. Yeah. If you can win the first year, obviously you can. But that was the plan, and that's exactly what we did. So
worked out.
It worked out.
Every lap in under a minute.
Second was
Every move made to matter. Every decision impacting the outcome of the race. Supercars in Perth. Every second matters. Bosch Power Tools Perth Super Sprint, May 17 to 19. Book now at Ticketek. Supercars. Unforgettable.
So how are you doing this at this stage? Are you still at school? Who's funding this? How's this all coming together?
So I was very, very lucky to have some help in terms of someone owned the Formula Ford. I was just working with Dad as an apprentice mechanic at his business. So we were sort of, just all pitching in and getting what we can done and doing as much work as we can ourselves, which was lucky. We could prep the car and service the engine and, keep it going and all that sort of stuff. Don't crash. That was the biggest thing.
Because that costs.
So it was always don't crash. Well, not don't crash, but, don't throw the thing at the fence every 5 minutes because otherwise we won't be at the next round.
Yeah, and, of course, Mike Borland, Spectrum, the Australian-built Formula Ford that been a few iterations of it in the lead-up towards when you got into it a bit later on in that period. So up against the McGulls were sort of kicking around. The Van Diemen was the established
absolutely,
car.
Absolutely,
The Spectrum suddenly became, this is really an alternative.
100%, here. Yeah. So when I was there, obviously Bargs was there as well doing Formula Ford, so he was a year before me. So, Bargs and I did a lot of development on the 06, which is we eventually ended up, 06B won the championship. It was great work having him around he'd already done his time. I think he finished second in the championship. Can't remember. It was a really, really great, I love the development side of things. It's just so much fun.
It makes sense given what you're doing these days.
Yeah, I know.
You're tinkering and
tinkering away in the shop.
Trying to make it go faster.
That's exactly right.
Exactly.
Love it, yeah.
So that 98 championship, I do remember that quite well because I was sort of a young journo popping up around the scene back in those days. So I went and looked it up the other day. Top five in the championship, you, P1. Christian Jones was the runner-up.
Yep.
Timmy Lay was third. Greg Ritter was fourth, and Christian Murchison from Western Australia was fifth.
Yep.
So they're the guys that are around in that period. But then looking at the championship point score, it made me remember that you started like a jet. The first four or five rounds of eight, you were miles in front. And then I was watching the numbers just turn to muck, crumble. What happened? You still won by a decent margin. The last few rounds.
We had a shocker. I think in Perth, I think we were P on the first or second lap. We were P2, and the shifter broke, and it just came off on my hand. So I think we DNF'd that, obviously. I don't even know what round that was. A long time ago now.
I think it was round six. Calder was round seven.
How many rounds were there? Eight rounds.
So you won three of the first five.
Perth, we had a DNF, and I think we went okay in the second race. I can't remember where we ended up, and then Calder is just – that's just Calder. It was
no good.
I just hate it. I don't know.
It just doesn't gel with me at all.
It never did. Right. And it's just one of those tracks that – it's probably the only track, to be brutally honest, that doesn't gel with me for some reason. I don't know what it is, but –
Everyone's got one.
It is what it is. Yeah. As long as it's only one.
Yeah, you don't want them all.
No, that's exactly right.
So in that 1998 season, if you rewind back, that Holden had the Young Lions program previous year, that they'd kept rolling that year. Ford had this thing, and I looked it up. I couldn't remember the name of it. I just remember the Brat Pack. It was the Generation XR Brat Pack. I think it was you, Lay, and Rita from memory.
Correct.
And you each got kind of paired with the V8 team to sort of – what was the whole deal that it was a bit more PR-y than anything, wasn't it?
I agree. It was more PR than anything else, I think, for Ford. We obviously got access to go and see the cars and sort of whatever, but I don't recall a massive amount of stuff. I think we went and did some bits and bobs at I've got vague remembrance of going to Brisbane or something and being on a stand there for Ford or bits and bobs like that. So, but it wasn't a massive amount of stuff there. We did a lot of drive days, but I think that was more when I was at FPR.
Yeah, which is a few years after.
Yeah, exactly.
So was winning the Formula Ford title, you get your first V8 drive with Alan Jones in the Longhurst car. Is that connected directly to that, or was that separate?
That was the – I think anyone that won that was going to – that was the prize for winning the championship, which is amazing, and I think that that should still happen today. I think there should be a decent prize to help people step through, getting the opportunity. So that was a massive opportunity, and obviously, you know, I did 10 pretty much straight after that. And without that opportunity, probably wouldn't have happened. So
was there other – because who were you linked to in that Generation XR thing? It wasn't Longhurst, was it?
DJR, Bowie, and I think it was, DJR.
Yeah.
So
before the Alan Jones thing, was there any other opportunities start to sniff out there? Because Formula Ford was where – Formula Ford, Formula Holden, there was no development series. There was no Carrera Cup.
Correct.
They were the places that people were looking to for the next
– it was like
– you know, lineup of drivers.
Formula Ford, and then it was supercars. There wasn't all these millions of classes like there was back then. Mm. I don't think there was any real alliances or nothing really happening, so to speak. So I think it was more the opportunity to drive with Tony and in his team, that was the launching pad.
Do you remember your first test of a V8 supercar?
Oh, yeah, I remember at Lakeside.
Yeah, that's a hell of a track. Sample,
And I mean, those cars had so much grip because he had the fantastic, I think, Yokohama tyres back then.
They ran Yokies and then they swapped to Dunlops.
But I remember, like, you just tipped the thing into turn one, and it would just pop up on two wheels with the grip it had. Like, it's just crazy compared to what I ended up driving. They were awesome, you know, and I just absolutely loved every minute of it. It was great, and I remember going and staying with Tony for a while, working with the team and spent some time up there. I should have been sweeping the floors, but I was in the engine room with Bo, sniffing around all the engines and learning. I learned so much off him, and Bo was he's an awesome guy. I was always in the engine room with him.
Just love fiddling.
Straight in the engine room.
History shows, though, that did you even get to drive in either of those two enduros? Sandown, you didn't. The thing
Sandown,
broke on the line.
Sandown, the tail shaft hit the ground as soon as the lights went green. And I don't think I drove at Bathurst. So
not in the race, anyway.
Not in the race, no. Yeah, did all
practice. Because then the car got wiped out in that multi-car shunt.
Down the elbow, right. Yeah. But, rumour has it the car come back perfect and there wasn't anything wrong with it. But
parked up.
Possibly.
So, now, that wasn't your first – that was in the era that we had two Bathursts. Remember that? It's a couple of years of two-litre races and V8 races.
Yes, correct.
But a month earlier, you'd been there in a Honda Civic at the two-litre Bathurst 1000, which I think probably everyone forgets, and you might have even forgotten.
You just remembered me. Yes, and I can't for the life of me think – I could picture him, but I can't remember the name of the guy that owned the car. But
Cameron Edwards and Alan Letcher.
That's correct. We went up there. I think Tony organised that. I also did there was a
so that's
one
just about
mate
getting laps.
Yeah, it was just about, I think it was just him getting me laps around the track, and
it was
I drove a BMW as well.
Oh,
it was a BMW and a that wasn't the same weekend, I don't think, from memory. I drove, you know, BMW and also there was a one mate category. I think it was a Mirage. Drove that.
Yep.
Did some laps in that. And then there was the Alan Letcher Honda Civic, which was fun. Unfortunately, it broke, but...
Did you break it?
No, I didn't actually. No.
You had that sudden look of, hang on,
and did I? Did I? Yeah. That was a long time. My memories, you've got to come right back.
That's what we're
crazy.
Here to do. We're here to jog memories.
I'm still trying to think of all the drivers that come through my kart room, so I'm going to get absolutely hammered.
Let's move. So, 98, we get this great opportunity. You get to do the Enduros V8s with Alan Jones, you know, world champion Formula
Absolutely.
One driver.
Yep.
How was AJ?
Yeah, AJ was awesome. No, he was not a problem at all. You know, looked, not an issue. Helped me through it all. And yeah, it was just easy. Mm. It was pretty cruisy and there's no issue. I do recall, I can't remember if it was 98 or 99, I remember Tony yelling at me for going too fast. I think I'd done like a 13.5 or something. He's like, what's up, buddy? just chill, young
it's
buck.
Right.
Just chill.
Right. Just calm your farm, mate. Calm your farm.
I'm like, what time's you doing? 11.5. Well, that's my aim.
So 99, did you do a deal with Longhurst? Because you were Formula Holden in terms of your racing,
yeah.
But
yeah.
And you went back and drove with him in his Castrol
Correct.
Car.
Yep.
Am I right in remembering that there might have been a chance to run a second car at some of those races and that didn't really happen? But clearly the Queensland Bathurst Enduros were the thing that you could at least hub your year around that with some Formula Holden.
I think it was mentioned, but it never really come to fruition. I'm very fuzzy.
Yeah.
I don't know whether he spoke to. I just remembered another name because I'm terrible with names. So George Stockman was the gentleman that owned my Formula Ford.
Yeah,
and he was also involved with Mike Ballen and that with the Formula Holden program. So I'm not sure whether Tony had. I know we'd had a meeting, but I can't remember if Tony had spoken to him about possible. I can't remember exactly the nuances of it, but it was I had a great time with Tony and. You know, he was very, very good to me.
So Formula Holden in 99.
Yep.
So you started with an older
92, yep.
Car. It was plain white. It wasn't a sponsor on it.
Plain white, no sponsors.
So how are you doing that?
George Stockman.
Okay, so the guy who owned your Formula Ford
got involved
to help.
He was helping me out with that. And we started off with that car. And I'm not sure what happened 100% in the background. But then we ended up going to as NRC with Arthur Abrahams
yep.
and driving the 94 car with the raised nose.
Yep.
Very cool. Mm. Like, they are awesome cars. And we got pole at Adelaide 500.
Which was the very first
and I think Adelaide we ended, 500. Yep, yep. And we ended up – I think we ended up third at Eastern Creek in the white car, in the old original
car.
Which
was the first round.
Which was the first round. But, I mean, there was some pretty good steerers in that field. You know, we were up against – I think Matt Halliday was there.
Simon Wills. So
Will Power was also.
Will Power was lurking around Formula Ford.
Formula
Ford, in your era, wasn't
and
he?
Also, exactly. So I've got photos of him on the year photo. I've actually sent them to him. He's like, oh.
So Formula Holden. I mean, for those who don't remember, maybe we've got plenty of listeners who are a bit younger, but they were former Formula 3000 cars with a Holden V6. 3.8, I think it was,
yep.
engine in the back of them.
Mm-hmm.
Serious. I mean, they had a shitty sound. They sounded a bit, ugh, but they were quick. And
yeah.
You ask anyone who raced them, and they got really fond memories.
Yeah, absolutely. No, awesome car. I remember the first time around at Phillip Island when we were shaking down the first white 92 car. And I remember just going through turn one the first time and I'm like, ooh. How am I going to go flat three? Because I knew it was flat. It was definitely flat. And the faster you went, the easier it got, which was hard to get your head around. Mm. And I remember, I think it was like 152 mile an hour and just hold it flat and just go straight around. And you'd come into turn one at Phillip Island and you'd be hard on the hard cut, bah, 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 and then go, bah, 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 mm. and then come out the other side, hit the limit of before turn two. It was just flat, just awesome. Yeah, the old neck was sore that day.
I mean, you're not ready for it, yeah.
No, that's exactly right. So, no, amazing cars, but they were just too expensive.
Mm.
That was crazy, crazy money and hard to get parts for. Everything's from Europe and, you know. And F3000 was that's basically GP2, GP2 is now. So
yeah.
One down from F1. So everything was lightweight. Everything was dainty. Everything was had to be replaced all the time. Amazing cars, but probably – yeah, not necessarily ideal for the small population of Australia.
Mm. So for 2000, JFR.
Yes.
John Faulkner Racing.
Yeah. So
did you go and work there?
Yeah. So I finished my apprenticeship with Dad and I'm like, you can keep your road cars. So I'm going to go and play race cars. So went and worked with JF and the team for a year.
Down
in Oakley South. Yeah, it was great. And it was really good because, you know, I was on, you know, and Barry Ryan was team manager.
Yeah.
Yeah. And little tidbit, I don't know whether you knew, Barry Ryan did his apprenticeship with my dad.
I did not know this.
There you go.
Oh, did he tell me this somewhere along the line? Maybe he told me on the pod we did last year and I forgot.
I remember listening to it, but I don't think.
Might not have come up.
I can't remember.
Yeah.
But yeah,
anyway,
so
that's cool.
So Baz, he was basically dad's lead mechanic. When I was there, I'd come home from school and go in there, and if it was a hot day, I'd tip a bucket of water over him. And, he'll remember that. But so he was the lead mechanic there with dad, and he was riding racing motorbikes at the time and go-karts, and that's how we met, through go-karts. Badge was at JFR, and went in there, and I was mechanic, I was doing fab, I was doing testing, you know, we built a GTP car.
The Ed Aitken car that won the Bathurst 3?
Correct, yeah. So I had a hand in sort of helping build that, and I was sort of a bit everywhere. PR, when we weren't at the track, I was helping, because we had Asia Online as a sponsorship that year.
That's right, yeah.
So, I was helping with the PR side of things there. And
so this is kind of a, I'll take any gig I can get to get my foot in the door at a V8 team.
100%.
Get the co-drive for the endurance races and anything else I can make happen.
Just be around.
At least I'm,
That's exactly right. So, but that was a fun year. And, unfortunately, we didn't finish the race, Bathurst. But
I was going to talk to you about that.
Do we have to?
Can't avoid it. Can't avoid it.
Do you know how to find the right oil for your car? Now you can find out quickly and easily online, thanks to Castrol's Rego to Oil tool. Simply type in your Rego, select your state, and within seconds you'll know the best Castrol products to unlock the edge of performance in your car. So what's your car best suited to? Just search Rego, the number 2, and oil, and find out.
Because it's not really on film. Like, no, there's no real vision. So for those who don't know, or don't remember, or it's 20-odd years ago now. So Bathurst 2000 was, I mean, we talked about having a wet Bathurst this year.
Oh.
2000 was wet the whole week since the previous weekend. It was miserable weather. It was very similar. I thought of a lot of 2000 when I was at Bathurst in 2022. Crazy race, lots of rain, big field compared to now. It all distills to the point where Tony Longhurst, who you raced, so he ran the Komatsu Alan Jones car, but he drove the Castrol car.
Correct.
Then you'd driven with him in the Castrol car the year before.
Yes, correct.
He had shut down his team, gone to drive for Stone Brothers, was leading the race by a long way with 10 or so laps to go, had a fuel fire, I think, earlier on too, where they hadn't got enough fuel in the car, but the way that the safety cars all landed, he was in a solid spot. He just had to come home, and then you two get together on track.
Yeah, unfortunately, I think I was on wets on a drying track, and he tried to pass me at the right. You know where? How do I explain it?
Was it where Mostert went in?
Mostert went in, basically.
In 2015,
massive shunt. So it wasn't the left hander. It was the right hander with a rock face on the driver's side. He tried to go up the inside there, I just didn't expect him to pass in that spot, because if I go out too wide, and I think the mirrors were covered in mud and all that sort of stuff. So, look, I didn't expect him to pass there. I didn't see him, and I turned in. He hit my rear wheel. I went backwards into the fence, ripped the whole fuel cell out of the thing, and I think ripped the front end out of his car, didn't it?
Yeah, like the wheel
Was
there a discussion afterwards?
No.
No? You guys never spoke about it?
No. No, I know Ross and Jimmy never spoke to me ever again. Every time I rang them, But I got the blame, I think, but I don't know.
Do you think vision had been seen by the cameras, it might have changed?
Yeah, but there's really not room for two cars there, because if you go offline, especially after a day at the track, you know,
it's been wet during the day.
You're in the wall. Mm. So it was kind of one of those spots where I don't think anyone's ever passed there, you know, unless someone's sort of crawling along at 3 kilometres an hour. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So that was it. Mm. So this is one of those things where I think it was probably, look, I didn't see him. He probably shouldn't have gone for the move there, especially with the lead he had. He would have got me down the straight anyway, one corner. Mm. And, unfortunately.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So for 2001, you go back with Larry Perkins' team. You
LP. And me Gildon and
in
Luke.
A second car.
Yep.
So other than this, what else are you doing at this point? Are you still – the Faulkner thing, I presume, just ended because there was an opportunity there? And
yeah, I think so. I think there was – I don't even think there was a talk of a second car or anything like that. I don't think Asia Online came back the year after.
That's right.
So money was tight. And, I don't really think there was there was any offer or anything that went from there. It went with LP the year after that. That was good. It's a good.
But are you doing anything else at that point?
So just working away. I was actually working at a turbocharging place. I actually still subcontract there now.
Oh, yeah.
Would you believe? So AXT Turbo in Dandenong. So I've been on and off there since 01. Mm. 4 year, then I go off and go and do something else, and then another 4 years. And
it's like a magnet.
So yeah, it's always sort of, when I'm not doing something else, I'll just go there and help Andrew out there and do that. I've been there the last 4 or 5 years, and slowly now I'm back going to do something else again. I said to him, 4 years, it's about time about for me to leave. But so I just got a subcontract there and go and tune cars, and we do a lot of diesel tuning and dyno tuning and just engines and making noise and making horsepower. So that's what I love.
Nice.
When I'm not driving, that's what I love.
How was Larry? How'd you get on with it? Did you get famous Larry bakes?
I got a few bakes. I remember Queensland 500 that year. I think I did a 90-lap stint, but the drink straw had gone down the bottom of the drink bottle and then come back up again.
Oh.
So I had no liquid, and it was hot that day. I had to come in because I was starting to see blurry, and I ran off the track and I just basically nearly passed out. And I remember him ringing me up and, "You shouldn't eat any drink." Okay, Larry. that was – I remember actually there was one – I think I'd locked a brake into the chase in practice and blew a tyre out. I just hadn't let the car settle enough before I jumped on the brakes and locked up and went across the grass, blew a tyre out, and I remember Larry dragging me aside going, "So what happened there?" I said, "Just made a mistake and I actually broke too early because the car wasn't settled and locked a brake, and car's good and it was my fault." And he's like, "No, all right, that's fine, no risk." He just, if you're straight up and down with Larry and you don't bullshit him, he's an awesome bloke. Mm. Awesome.
Oh, I've always found that.
Like, I think that's with most people, to be really honest. But he was waiting for me to make an excuse, and he was ready.
Young bloke, yeah, young tires. Bloke,
yeah. Oh no, the tires and this and the balance and I didn't like that. No, don't make an excuse. Just put your hand up.
Own up to it. Move on.
Own up. Move on.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah. So at this stage, are you starting to get a little frustrated that you haven't quite been able to grab a full-time gig? Have you got anyone have you got a manager pushing you here? Are you trying to raise some budget? Because it was a bit different back then where you sort of – money still talked, but not like it does now.
It was hard – this is my personal opinion. I think it was hard with the owner-driver scenario.
There's lots of them back then.
Yeah, because it was always, Larry was driving, Longhurst was driving, John Faulkner was driving. Glenn Seaton was driving. And I think to a certain extent, and I don't know whether they'll ever admit it, they didn't want some young buck to come in and go quicker than him. I don't think, So it was tough in those days. They definitely suppressed, "You crash my car, you'll never drive again," sort of thing. So that was mentally not great, where it's a bit different
almost
now.
Like you were scared
You almost go, "Look, I reckon I can do a 12.5, but I'll just leave it at 13.0, just
there's no point
because I want to be back next year, Where, I remember where now it's like, "Mate, just send it, go out and send it and we'll fix the car."
Mm.
A bit more European style now than what it was back then. It's more cutthroat now. So I think that it was, because, being an owner-driver, it's like, every time if he puts a mark on it, it's going to cost me. And so, it was a bit more suppression back then. It was well known if you crash, you're not coming back next year.
Mm.
And that didn't actually prove to be the case because a lot of my co-drivers crashed and then came back, unfortunately.
So do you have anyone helping here? Because I know a lot of young drivers in that period were grabbing a manager, and a lot of them didn't know the sport, and people were trying to – I think a lot of people hadn't quite cottoned on to the whole if I go find a sponsor that helps kick a door into a team, I'll cop an earn out of that and I'll get the driver. So many people were just walking around with a resume saying, I won that and I won this and I can drive real good. Please give me a drive, sir. Like everyone had that mentality there.
100%. And I think that that was probably my downfall was I'm certainly no PR politician sort of person. I'm more put me in the back of the workshop and or whatever it is. And then when
you
it's
do
time,
your talking
when
on
it's
the stopwatch.
Time to go fast, you know, put me in the car and we'll sort it out sort of thing. So, and I think that, I was always under the impression if I win everything, then I'm going to be a professional race driver. And I couldn't have been more wrong. I didn't understand it. And if I knew what I knew now, I'd do it completely differently.
Yeah.
But, that's the way it is.
That's life.
You know, that's life. And it's also not necessarily my personality. I can get up and speak in front of people and talk to sponsors and it's no issue. But going out and finding money and doing proposals, not my thing. Not my thing. And there was talks. I did try and get some help, but everyone wanted $100,000 retainer and for me to pay them. Oh, you give me $100,000
with
and
no
then
guarantee
I'll,
of,
yeah, 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 and no guarantee of any money. So and it sort of just yeah. That was wasn't sort of something I could have ever done or ever thought of doing. So it was more just get your head down, try and get some drives and hopefully snag a result at Bathurst or something, which will hopefully lead to an opportunity. And it just never really unfolded, to be really honest.
2002, I forgot about this. I went digging. You tested for Lansvale.
I did.
You know how I remember
at Oran Park.
You know how I found this?
Eh?
The Adam Macro Racing website is still on web.archive. Your old website's still there.
Jesus.
So I presume that didn't lead anywhere either?
No.
Because that's the year you missed. You didn't do
Bathurst
in
2002. No, I didn't do 22. No, 02. So I didn't do 02. That's right. I tested at Oran Park for the Lansvale car. Cameron McConville was the regular driver. It went well and I don't think there was any issues. I can't necessarily – don't know who'd they go with.
02. Luffy.
Luffy.
Yeah.
Buddy Luffy.
You two got together later on.
Yeah, we did.
You see, all these people we talk about, you end up –
it's all incestuous.
It's a small world.
Yeah, absolutely. So – but yeah, and that's the difference. Luffy's awesome driver, but he can also talk.
Mm.
You know, he's a good – very, very good at getting sponsorship and he's much better at me than that stuff. And that's probably what's – kept him up and going, you know, so because he can bloody steer, there's no doubt about that. But he's got that extra little bit of PR, he's good, but he's better at relationships than me, and that's probably was my downfall.
You said before about if you had your time over, you'd do a bit differently.
Yeah,
in that period or before, what would you have done differently
if I knew what I knew now?
Yeah,
relationship building,
yeah,
definitely. Yeah,
the result sheet's not going to do all the
time. I was just focused on winning races and winning championships, which I did. At the end of the day, I won Formula Ford. We for the short time, was in Formula Holden. We won in that or got pole and we were quick that. Obviously Super 2 won that. Podium at Bathurst. So everything that I've ever done in karting or cars or even as an engineer in Hyundai, I was still we're winning. So that was easy. That was the easy bit. So, definitely building relationships, you know, just that was basically that's how it worked, and that's what I didn't do.
What you did do around that time, though, we went through the photo files and found this car.
Yes.
Did you build a Datsun 120i improved production car?
I did.
Whoa. Yeah. Why did you pick a 120i?
Okay, so when I was looking for a car, all I cared about.
You just want to race something. You just want
to keep going. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, yeah. All I cared about was weight. Well, I just wanted this thing to be light. Yeah, exactly. So I found this car that was a hill climb car. It had an old L20B with Webers on it, but it had an aluminium cage in it that was already logbooked. And you couldn't build a new car with an aluminium cage.
Uh-huh.
So I'm like, that'll do. I actually did a bit of research and I knew a guy that had an SR20, Nissan SR20 engine in his Datsun 120i coupe. This is a four-door, but I'm like, well, we know that fits. So, grabbed the car, ripped the L20B out, threw an SR20, hooked it up with Motec, put a big turbo on it, and went and run OP for some fun. And she was a weapon. Didn't stop. Didn't really turn very well, but she went good in a straight line. Did 21s at back in the day, 21s at Sandown. So Sandown,
that's not too bad.
There is a video on my YouTube. In-car.
Oh, we have to find this.
Yeah, and there's also in-car in the rain at Phillip Island.
Oh.
Chasing down Ben Schutz in his RX-7. And it's just, I'm working harder than I've ever worked before. It's fourth gear, wheel spin. She had the oil, lock diff and just got the welder out. No special diffs or anything. So, but once again, a lot of fun and kept me driving. Mm. So I'd actually done something. Obviously, I didn't drive a supercar for a couple of years, so, but at least I've been driving something.
Because weren't you driving? You mentioned Motec before, but yeah, Richard Bender from Motec had that Daytona Coupe stuff.
Correct. Yeah. So we were obviously Mike, the connection with Mike Borland, who built that car, and Richard, Mike got me on board to help develop that car. What a beautiful car! Mm. Like Mike Borland is such a genius. People don't understand how good he is. He's just. Every car he builds is just the balance and the way it feels. Like you close your eyes, it almost feels like a Formula Ford, like just the way that it drove. And it only had, I think when we first drove it, it had like just a little 302 with a single throttle body on it, 8-inch wheels. And we were, I think we just dipped into the 39s at Phillip Island, you know, so it was seriously quick, good little car, good, lots of fun. So we're doing state series in Mark Sports in that car. And that's the actual chassis that Brocky passed away in.
That's that one.
Wow. Yeah. Yep. I'm 90% sure.
Mm.
Correct me if I'm wrong. Mm. Viewers, but.
Listeners. So you at least you stay racing. That's exactly right.
You're staying involved. Yeah, I'm staying involved. And it was quite often that I'd come in after the race, park the Datsun, and jump straight into the.
Daytona
and straight out again. So, it's good fun. And I love state series. I love the grassroots. It's really cool.
It's the camaraderie. It's the, there's a bit of competition, but what motor racing event doesn't have a bit of that stuff going on?
Absolutely.
But you get some cool cars. You get a bit of variety. You get people from very different backgrounds.
Correct.
It's a great melting pot of, fantastic. Of all this sort of stuff.
Absolutely fantastic.
So, you don't get a go in the Bathurst 1000 of 02.
Mm-hmm.
So you're thinking, I'm cooked here. If I miss one, I'm out.
I don't remember ever really thinking that. I don't even remember. I don't even remember how the FBR thing come around with for 03.
Mm.
I'm not sure whether Hossack was there and maybe.
Well, that's an interesting one because I had to do some. Reminder-ing on this. So they were in an interesting situation this year. So this is 2003.
Correct,
we've gone to now. So
yeah.
I think the only thing you did – so you're still doing the Datto and the Daytona that
I think so, yeah.
You
yeah.
did a one-off in Formula Ford at Oran Park.
That's right. I did a cameo for Mike. That's right. Because Mike I think they were having
– So there was an owner, Mark West, who had
Mark
a car.
Mark West, yeah. And he's Just Cars.
Correct.
Yeah, it's magazine.
And he wanted someone good to have running the car – whether it had been repaired or whether it was – I can't remember the specifics, but he wanted someone good to have a go and you were someone good.
Yeah, so. But I also think that Mike's team was struggling that year and I think Mike wanted to try and bring me out of retirement to help with the team and to to still prove the concept of the car and everything like that. I nearly got fired because I was so slow when we first tested at Winton. I was still in supercar mode. It's like, you bloody – so it took me a couple of test days to get my head back into
the 5 years since you.
Yeah.
Because the thing was in Formula Ford, if you won the national title,
you couldn't
go back. No one got to run as the reigning champion because you, by the rules, had to go.
Yeah, that's exactly right. So, so we did a couple of test days. Did a test day because we were going to run at Oran Park. So, Oran Park, we did a test day. Did a test day at Winton. After Winton, Mike's like,
this is not going good.
This is nasty. I'm like, no, we'll be right. I've got my head around it. So, and then we ended up, I didn't really want to upset the championship too much. I was a bit sort of, but we ended up, I think we put it on the front row. And
I think you finished third for the weekend.
Third for the weekend on the podium. And it was I probably could have pushed a bit harder, but I sort of I didn't want to upset the people coming in for one race, and I'd be a little bit annoyed if you know someone had crashed into me or something and ruined my championship for one off. So I thought podium's good, and we were in the hunt all the whole way. And Christian Murchison was one of those guys. I do recall being second and seeing Christian come up behind me, and I'm like, I'm gonna let him go because he wasn't scared.
I don't even remember who was in Formula Ford in 03.
Yeah.
Might have to delete that because it makes me sound like I don't know what I'm doing.
Mm.
There was someone else in that Oran Park Formula Ford round, though, who had a same name as you.
He did.
Young Timothy,
yep.
Your brother. Is that the only time you guys have raced against one
Correct.
Another? That one weekend?
Yep.
Out of all the racing you guys have ever done, open wheelers, so your little brother, that's the one time that you've, like, not even, nothing else. I actually thought you were going to say, oh, no, but there was this one other time we did this and we did that, but
no.
That's it?
No.
Wow.
Mm.
Who would have thought?
It's pretty bizarre, really, I suppose, but.
Yeah.
Yeah. We went on different paths.
Yeah. Yeah, understandable.
Mm.
So we are going to rewind to the FPR thing now.
Go.
So in that year, they were new.
Yeah.
They'd bought out Glenn Seaton, created their own new team.
Correct.
Ran three cars, Lowndes, Seaton, Bernard.
Correct.
But the Bernard car was run under the Rod Nash license that they had leasing.
You know more than me.
Well, I remember this because they were trying to just run two cars for the Enduros, but under the obligations of that license had to run three.
Ah, okay.
So they needed some steerers. So Lowndes and Seaton went together. Bernard and Owen Kelly went together.
Correct.
And you and Darren Hossack got the gig to drive for FPR in the number five.
Correct.
Which was Seaton's normal car, I think.
Yes,
it was.
Correct.
Do you remember how that all came to be? It was a bit left field.
You know what? I was just thinking about this before. I can't for the life of me, because when did Darren run in the Wins car? What year was
that? Oh, that was some years earlier, 97.
Yeah, that was really, that was a long time before that.
Yeah, so, he'd been out of V8s as well for a while.
So I'm not quite sure exactly who rang me or that's mental gone. I can't remember exactly how that all came about, but I do recall going in to the factory and I can't even remember where the factory was back then. But
I think they were still in Seaton's place.
They must have been, in Dandenong, that's right, yeah. So I remember going and doing that, but I don't recall who called me or how it came about.
Mm.
I'd have to ask Glenn. it was great. You know, it was great to drive with Darren, especially after, as we spoke before, he came through my dad's kart team and we'd had a long association together. So it was really, really cool for us to end up driving at Bathurst together. Mm. It was great. And that started a 3-year
sort of relationship.
Relationship with FPR. So,
but am I right in remembering you tested for Briggs that year? So I did a bit of researching and your name came up among a pile of drivers that they tested in the middle of 03. I presume for an endurance drive. But I mean, the irony was that Briggs soon became 888 not long after that. And, of course, you ended up there later on. But
actually,
you're looking high at the ceiling.
Like, I actually think you're right.
I remember Simonson's name was listed there.
I think
maybe.
You're right. I think I did go to QR and test a Briggs car, which is actually quite ironic. I've forgotten about that, which is quite ironic because that would have been my first Super 2 car.
Yeah, possibly. Because the Briggs cars became the first 888 cars when they acquired the team and they ended up with Howard team, which
we'll
will
get
on to.
We'll get there.
It's not far off. It's not far off. It's not far off.
We'll get there.
So this left field FPR call comes. They need drivers. They've got a car.
Yep.
Great. We'll do it.
Yep.
Rolls into the next year with Alain Menu, the Swiss former British touring car driver.
What a legend.
How'd you get along with him?
Oh, mate. Me and Alain got on real well, and I'll never forget the first test day. We go to Winton. And I go out and do some laps and car's good and all cruising around. And I think Alain went and ended up through the ditch off at the sweeper. And he came in here. This car is a piece of shit. It does not turn. It does not stop. I'm like, yeah, mate, no carbon brakes and bloody aero around here. It's all horsepower and shitty tyres and no aero. And we got on like a house on fire. And we'll get to that. But, you know, I think he was a key factor on and how I got into 888.
Ah, okay.
Because there's a connection there.
Okay.
It's all incestuous again.
Yeah,
it's
motor racing. That's how it works. But we
became really, really good friends and he became a little bit of a mentor for me and awesome bloke, very down to earth, amazing driver.
Hmm.
And some of the stories like over dinner, it's like F1 stories and tests and I never forget he trying to explain to me how to – he was trying to get his head around driving F1 car and how late you can brake and not die. Like, you know, he was just like, I'm going 300 and they're expecting me to brake at 60 metres or whatever it was, you know, some stupid –
the brain
and
is
he's
not
just
computing.
Like, the brain's – I'm at 150 and I'm like, yeah, exactly. So that – he said that was – once you got your head around the braking on the F1 car – it was the rest of it was
because they let him loose in a Williams,
correct?
Because of the Renault tie,
correct? Correct. Yeah. So yeah, some cool stories in that days, and also good stories from the then team manager, John
Russell.
Russell. Yeah. Yeah. Who I formed a really really good relationship as well. We got on real well.
Who is with Williams?
I always got on real well with the engine builders and the engineers. Because always talking about engines or chassis or just general engineering. Yeah, no, we always had good rapports, and Rob Benson was there building engines, so yeah. I was in annoying him in the engine shop, of course.
They meant to put a stay out macro sign on all these engine shops.
And
all these trends.
Sorry, I just had thought of a cool story. I remember John Russell telling me about the weekend when because he was at Williams the weekend when Senna passed, and he also ran Mansell as well. In that, and he had the track map. He had Senna's track map from when Ratzenberger passed, and it had a big cross on it where he'd
– oh, wow.
He'd had it on the wall in his office at FPR, in, I think in the same factory they're in now.
Yeah.
So just a cool thing that's popped in my head. If I think of something, I'll have to say it because otherwise I'll forget. But, that was pretty cool, and he always – I remember because Mansell was my – he was my man when I was a kid. Just because he was so hard. He would drive the wheels off that thing all day, every day. Very SVG like, you know. John would say every time Mansell's car would come in, everything was cooked. The thing would be going ting 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 ting. The brakes were smoking. The engine was overheated, over revved. The tires were worn out. But it was he just absolutely ragged it the whole time.
And there you have it, Adam Macro on the V8 Sleuth podcast, powered by Repco. And the best part of all of this is part two is still to come. Next week, part two, when we go deeper into Adam's time in V8 supercars, particularly his winning association with Howard Racing in the development category. He also answers the National Motor Racing Museum couch racer questions and tackles the top 10 shootout. Thanks for tuning in. I hope you really enjoyed this chat with Adam Macro. We've got plenty more podcast chats over the weeks ahead, and we're already planning for 2023. If you've got some guest suggestions or perhaps a topic suggestion or a question for a Q&A, send it to us via the contact page on the V8 Sleuth website. There's a link in the show notes. Right, that's me done. Enjoy your week. Join me next week for another edition of the V8 Sleuth podcast, powered by Repco.